Connecticut Republicans claim that there are staggering jumps in crime in their state. A 61% increase in murders in Hartford and a 23% increase in car thefts across the state compared to last year. That's according to the Connecticut Mirror. This is And Another Thing. I'm Maya Schwader.
And I'm Dara Kennedy. The GOP recently proposed their own plan for Safer Connecticut, composed of three parts, including a response to crime for juveniles and adults, job creation, and support for the police. Their response also includes lowering the age and expanding the list of crimes for which a juvenile suspect can be tried as an adult in court. This ongoing debate surrounding crime in Connecticut leaves many wondering which side is correct and, more importantly, what solutions will be made to help the residents and voters of the state of Connecticut. Joining us now to answer some of these questions is Connecticut State Representative Republican Craig Fischbein. He is a ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee and has been a leading voice in this carousel of data debates. Representative Fischbein, welcome to the show. Why are these debates ongoing over data? Are the numbers not simply the facts?
Well, thank you for having me. The numbers should be the facts. Part of the problem is that certain Democrats in leadership are focused on violent crime, and that's what you'll hear. They'll couch their response, you know, people in Connecticut are safer. But the real is they must realize that property crimes, particularly motor vehicle theft, many times involve crimes of perpetual violence in that, you know, other cars are being hit, there's chases on the highway, there's motor vehicle accidents. None of those statistics fall into the violent crime sphere. And when we look at the stats over the last, well, we'll say 2010 through 2019, there's been a decrease in the arrests of adults, but there's been actually a 15, if not 16% increase in arrests of juveniles. And that is being ignored. And that's part of what we're looking to address. So we rely upon the same data. It's just cherry picking is going on.
Do I hear you saying that the governor should not be saying that the state is safe, that we should actually be ringing an alarm to some of these higher numbers?
Yes, I think that we should be ringing an alarm. Certainly when we have juveniles stealing cars, and we had an incident in New Britain where somebody who was jogging was hit by a juvenile who had stolen a car. We've had serious incidents on our highways where people have been rear-ended by juveniles. You know, they're playing Grand Theft Auto for real life, and it's scary. And for the governor to think that we are safer here, he just does not know what's going on in our state.
Now, we did mention that the Republicans proposed a three-part plan. It's called A Safer Connecticut to End Juvenile Injustice, Create Opportunities, and Make Connecticut Safe. Can you walk us through what those 3 points are?
Well, I can only speak to the juvenile justice aspects of the plan. I think you're referring to the Senate plan, which is more overreaching than the House plan was. But some of the things that we think would be appropriate is next day arraignments. If a youth is arrested for a felony, Class A misdemeanor, or a charge resulting from the loss of life or serious physical injury, sexual assault, or one involving use of a firearm, we shouldn't have to wait 2 weeks for that youth to get arraigned. You should be arraigning them the next day, and at which time you're going to try and get them into a diversionary program, as most people do in our criminal courts. I think that's very important. That's an important step forward. You mentioned in your opening about having certain crimes being able to lower the age as far as adjudication in adult court. I mean, there was recently an arrest of a 14-year-old for murder in Stamford, and it wasn't the first time this young man's been arrested. It's his 13th time, and because he's 14 years old, that case cannot be transferred to adult court, and if he's convicted, the maximum penalty he can get under our current system is 30 months of supervised probation. And at the age of 22, that conviction for murder is erased off of his record. That is the system that we presently have, and everybody that I've spoken with does not find that to be acceptable. So, you know, I know we are limited on time here today, but those are a couple of the areas that we feel have to be addressed and should be addressed sooner rather than later.
Well, we do have still about another minute or so to go. Maybe my question then is, what populations are most affected by what you just described?
When you say populations, I think what? It's across the state. I mean, of 14-year-olds, we certainly have, you know, everywhere across the state. If you're talking about racial makeup, I know that I recently looked at the statistics for Berlin because I was speaking there last week. And their arrests of juveniles that fall within some of the criteria here was predominantly white young men. If that's, you know, the question that you're asking. So, but I think that this affects all aspects of society.
That was the question. Do you think this has been ongoing for so long, back and forth, back and forth? Will you get anywhere with this legislation, with this proposal? Will there be a moment where everyone agrees and this is pushed through?
I sure hope so. You know, I'm a member of the Juvenile Justice and Policy Commission. We met today. We did discuss some of the things that are in our plan. We're going to continue to discuss. I would hope that, you know, leadership in our legislature is, you know, listens to the people that are clamoring for something to be done here. So I remain hopeful.
Connecticut State Representative Craig Fischbein, thank you for joining us on And Another
Thing.
Thank
you.
It may come as no surprise that Connecticut Democrats see things a little differently. Looking at the same numbers, the Democrats are saying, hang on, it's not as bad as all that. In fact, FBI data show Connecticut has the fourth lowest crime rate in the nation. Earlier, we spoke with Representative Steve Staffstrom. He's the co-chair of the Joint Judiciary Committee, and he's been vocal about how this data does not say what the GOP says it does. We asked him why the interpretations are so wildly different.
I'm not real sure. I mean, I think if you look at the crime data, Connecticut should be really proud. We are one of the absolute safest states in the nation and have had a precipitous drop, particularly in violent crime, over the last decade. Whereas the rest of the nation has actually seen an increase in violent crime over the last decade, Connecticut is one of the few states that has bucked the trend and has seen a steady decrease in criminal activity over the last 10 years.
There are some increases, though. There's been an increase in property thefts. There's been an increase in murders in certain cities. Car thefts are up across the state. What do you say to that?
Yeah, so let's break those down, right? I think if you take violent crime as a whole, violent crime is down. Nobody can dispute that. Are murders up? Yes, they are, as they are around the nation. And I think part of that is because we have not done a very good job nationally of getting a handle on the gun crisis and the gun epidemic that we have in this nation. Connecticut's property crime, particularly motor vehicle crime, has fallen dramatically over the last 30 years to where we hit a historic low in 2019. There has been a slight uptick in 2020 and then a leveling out in 2021 thus far, which again tracks national trend lines in terms of an uptick in property crime. But we are still well below the levels we were 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago in property offenses. And in fact, as I said, 2019 was a historic low. So have we come up off of that historic low? Unfortunately, we have. But let's think about where we are as a baseline.
An uptick is still a slight uptick. One of your colleagues in the House, Vincent Candelora, said, you know, doesn't really matter what it looks like in comparison to the rest of the country. I just care about Connecticut. What do you say to that?
Yeah, so I agree. I think anytime we can take actions to reduce criminal activity, that's a good thing, right? Nobody wants there to be crime. But I think when we're looking at the data and why there's an uptick in criminal activity, we would be foolish to look just at Connecticut and not to look at what is happening around us in surrounding states or what is happening nationally. Because, you know, if you're going to address a problem, you have to first isolate what the cause of the problem is. And I think the uptick in property crime is not a Connecticut-specific problem. It is a national phenomenon that we have to react to here in Connecticut.
So let's turn to these new proposals from the GOP for a moment. They seem to be taking sort of a carrot and a stick approach. When you saw it, what was your take on it?
So I think there are some of these proposals that actually were part of a bipartisan discussions we had back in the summer, and I think are reasonable proposals. There are other proposals that unfortunately would take Connecticut back to the failed tough on crime era of the 80s and 90s, which did nothing to reduce crime and merely led to the incarceration of more Black and Brown people around our state and around our country. So I am very hesitant on some of those because we have seen that it is much more important to be smart on crime than it is to be tough on crime. Connecticut has been a national leader in that movement over the last 10 or 12 years in particular. And that, I believe, is part of the reason we've seen an overall drop in violent criminal activity, whereas the rest of the nation has not.
What would you propose if, in your ideal world, with your position as a representative, if not what the GOP is putting forward right now, what would you propose to get that little uptick in crime back down to a lower baseline?
Yeah, so I think we need to continue to invest in services and programs that we know stop recidivism, right? You're not going to stop people, particularly a young person, from committing every single crime. What we need to do is stop someone from becoming a repeat offender. So the way to do that is to continue to invest in pretrial diversionary programs, counseling, resources to figure out why it is that someone commits a crime in the first place. Is it trauma? Is it influences? Is it societal disadvantage? Why is someone engaging in criminal activity? How do we get them the resources, the services, the supports to reverse that trend and to make better decisions moving forward? And that's something that myself as chair of the Judiciary Committee and Representative Tony Walker as the Appropriations Chair have been working on and looking at, not just now, but have been working on for years. And it really is putting those resources in to make someone make better choices.
Since you mentioned the isolation of the pandemic, the uptick, do you think that if and when the pandemic ends, the slight uptick, as you put it, in crime might just naturally fall?
I don't know that naturally, but I think what we will see is you will return to sort of the status quo ante, where you will have some of these services and supports in the community come back to where they were before. I think the other thing is, don't forget, the pandemic wreaked havoc on our judicial system, and we weren't able to process cases through the judicial system nearly as quickly as we did. You know, I've looked at arraignment data. The average time of juvenile arraignment in 2019 was 3, 4, 5, 6 days. In the pandemic, that jumped to nearly 2 months between time of arrest and arraignment. So I think it's as these, we work back through kind of the backlog and we get these services and supports back in place, I firmly believe you will start to see our crime numbers be more reflective of what they were in 2019 when it comes to property crimes. Like I said, we've not seen an uptick in sort of violent crime other than gun crimes. But I think the property crimes will come back down to 2019 levels.
Representative Steve Staffstrom is the co-chair of the Joint Judiciary Committee. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, take care.
After the break, we'll be joined by a data expert to explain some of these crime numbers we're hearing today. And we'll also hear from an advocacy organization leader aiming to bring youth voices into public policy discussions. More And Another Thing when we return. With Maya Schrader, I'm Dara Kennedy. Earlier this month, Governor Ned Lamont insisted that Connecticut is one of the safest states in the union. And as we've heard today, the data could or could not bear that out, depending on whom you ask. So we wanted to ask an expert and data of data and crime.
Ben Barone. He is a policy and research specialist at the Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy at the University of Connecticut. Barone has spent the past 3.5 years looking closely at the question of fairness and the disconnect between minority communities and law enforcement. Ken, thank you so much for being with us. And another thing, you have worked on research around crime trends in Connecticut. What does your data show?
Good evening, and thanks for having me. I think with the data is always complicated, right? It always tells a unique story. And what the data tells us is that over the course of the last 15-plus years, crime has generally been decreasing here in the state of Connecticut. And there's been a lot of focus over the last several months on the increase in crime that has occurred both in Connecticut and nationally in 2020. But as a data researcher, 2020 is actually not the big anomaly. And in fact, 2019 is the year that really stands out. We had the largest single year decline in crime in the state of Connecticut between 2018 and 2019. And then we saw an uptick in crime between 19 and 20, but it was nowhere near the decrease that we saw between 18 and 19. And so when you look at the data trends over the last 10 years, the year that really stands out for researchers is 2019. 2020 actually looks much more like the 2018 and 2017 numbers.
That's very interesting. We've heard a lot of different interpretations of this new crime data. Why is this?
Well, I think, we are heading into an election year. And so sometimes there are different interpretations of how significant the numbers are. And I think, I think everybody is looking at the same data set, but potentially interpreting it differently, right? I think you have one group that is looking at the 2020 crime and comparing it to 2019 and seeing an increase and saying that's a problem. And then you have, other folks, like myself, who do this for a while, who we try not to do a year-over-year comparison because any one year can be an outlier. So usually you try and look at 3, 5, and 10-year trends. At least that's how we try and do it. And so, as I said, 2019 is really the outlier for how low it was. And I think we're sort of not surprised as researchers that there was an uptick in 2020 because the uptick occurred in Connecticut. It began in April of 2020. So if you look at all the crime indicators by month, you see crime, particularly property crime, start to increase just as the pandemic mm-hmm. was really wreaking havoc and causing shutdowns here in the state. So the interesting thing is we actually have a pretty good handle on what drove the increase in 2020. It was the pandemic. And actually, I think there's a lot more work occurring now to try and figure out what drove the substantial decrease between 18 and 19.
Ken Barone is a policy and research specialist at the Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy at the University of Connecticut. Thank you so much for crunching the numbers with us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Much of the recent stats we've been discussing around crime in Connecticut today have specifically involved juvenile offenders. According to the Sentencing Project, which is reported by the Connecticut Mirror, young Black people are 10 times more likely to be incarcerated than white youths. Joining us now live is Ileana Pujols. She is the policy director of Connecticut Justice Alliance, an advocacy organization dedicated to ending the criminalization of youth and children. Ileana, welcome to the show. As we've said, there are already huge racial disparities in who gets arrested. Would those proposals hurt or help your advocacy?
Thank you for having me. I think specific to the GOP's proposal release, I think there are some good sections that could strengthen a lot of things in community, right? Investing in jobs, investing in education. I think, unfortunately, when we start having the discussion about increasing harsher penalties in a system that currently disproportionately funnels people of color into it, that becomes a little dangerous because then we risk exacerbating the racial disparities that already exist.
Tell us, what are some of the things you're working on right now with your youth advisors?
So with the justice advisors, our mission overall is to get all young people out of prison-like environments. And some of those, some of the specific things that we work on is the removal of school resource officers from schools, banning the use of chemical agents on young people in the Department of Corrections, getting young people just completely out of the adult system and transferred into the juvenile system, investing in community-based resources that are identified by communities directly impacted. I think those would definitely be some of the things that we prioritize in our work.
So would the Justice Alliance be more reform of police structure or defund of police policies?
We've never really been very vocal with the defund the police. We do think that there is room to defund areas of police, like of law enforcement, and then increasing opportunity to invest that money in community. I think we lean heavily on the fact that we're not comfortable with the over-reliance of police, right? And this idea that we need law enforcement to keep communities safe. We hone deeply on the idea that community can really, you know, lean on themselves. And if we really invest in communities and rely less on law enforcement, that we would be in a safer Connecticut.
When you listen to this debate that's been ongoing in Connecticut on these crime numbers, the state is safe, but the numbers are up. But the numbers are down, and don't get scared. What side do you feel like is getting it right?
I feel like there's no right side, and that's what makes this so complicated, right? Whether you're the victim, the person who has offended, everybody's experience is completely valid. I think where the challenge then comes into play is how to deal with the kids that are engaging in crime. Connecticut has traditionally been very successful in reducing their numbers of kids that are arrested. And I think we're finally at a place where we have a small amount of kids that are super high risk. And what we haven't really perfected is how to deal with that population. And I think in order to do that, we need to explore options that we haven't traditionally used. I mean, there's data that shows that prison is not effective, right? And it does more harm than good. And especially when we're dealing with children who are still developing and are going to engage in opportunity crime, right? And they're going to do things that they'll learn their lesson from. But I think we need to be more unique about how we deal with this population in terms of really meeting their needs.
Ileana Pujols, Policy Director of Connecticut Justice Alliance. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us once again for And Another Thing, a daily production of New England Public Media.
And Another Thing's audio producer is Denise Vozella. Production assistant is Alex Severo, and our technical director is Betsy Cordes.
The managing editor of And Another Thing is Mark DeGon. The chief content officer for New England Public Media is Maxie Jackson. I'm Dara Kennedy.
And I'm Maya Schwader. We hope you'll join us again for And Another Thing.